If Transylvania and Dracula's castle are all you can relate to when it comes to Romania, then it's time you get to know the real Romania. It's a country with a fascinating cultural heritage and a beautiful countryside. And while tourist crowds are a problem in so much of Europe, Romania is still pretty undiscovered. In fact, it's a secret and a great place to enjoy an inside look at the old Europe and the traditional ways of life. Tim Tendick leads 13-day tours around Romania, and he's our guide today as we explore one of Europe's surprisingly untouristed corners. Tim, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure to be back here. I always enjoy talking about travel with you.
Good, Tim. And right now you happen to be in Sighișoara, the most beautiful medieval city.
I am. I'm in Sighișoara today. Oddly enough, I'm about across the street from where the inspiration for Dracula was born. So not
That's
to feed
right.
into the Dracula legend, but I'm right in his hometown.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, Romania is one of those countries that most Americans know very little about. And what we know about is Transylvania. You can't even say Transylvania without trying to do a stupid Dracula accent. And Dracula, what's your take on this anyways?
He's an interesting figure. There's definitely some debate over whether Bram Stoker had any idea or if he got the inspiration just from a painting. But there's so much more to him than just this the Dracula element. The historical character had a lot of interesting aspects between how he filled his place, how he protected his area, and how he's quintessentially Romanian and how he navigated being on the frontier between more powerful empires. Because Romania has been a frontier land for a couple thousand years, and he's part of that story of how do you survive as a small area between something as powerful as the Holy Roman Empire or the Ottoman Empire? How do you make that work?
Now, there's a good tour guide. You say you take a cliche that won't go away, I mean Dracula, and you give it real context and real meaning. I mean, he was romanticized in later centuries by some British author, right, in this mm-hmm. novel about Dracula. But there is so much more. You write that Romania is the ultimate blend of empires and cultures. How is it a blend of empires and cultures?
They really, by virtue of the accidents of geography, they have been kind of on the leading edge of pretty much any civilization you can run into. You can see the Greek Hellenic influence and some of the churches as you move around. You definitely have the Ottoman presence coming from the southeast. You definitely have a strong allegiance to ancient Rome that is definitely a forefront in of the Romanian mind.
And you have this amazing German. On my very first visit to Romania, I felt like I was finding pre-World War II Germany in Romania.
Absolutely. Where I had breakfast this morning, some of the stucco has come off and you can see the original artwork underneath there and it's in German.
Wow. So there's these enclaves. I guess people need to understand it's just people moved around and Germans established little communities all over what we think of as Eastern Europe. And high in the mountains of Romania, you've got these German churches and these German towns, and that's where you are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you had when the Holy Roman Empire was kind of going out to these areas and they were nervous about the Ottoman Empire down there. They brought a whole bunch of Saxons down here to form a kind of a buffer state. So I'm in Sighișoara is the Romanian name for it, but it's one of the German towns. So it's also called Schlossberg was its German name. And if you go into one of the cemeteries, which is right by here, all of the names are Heinrich von Steuben, and they're all of the epitaphs on the tombstones are in German.
In the churches, you got these old Lutheran churches, and they're fortified. Can you describe one of these fortified churches to us? It's really a fascinating thing.
Absolutely. As you move around the country, you'll see them halfway up hills or on top of hills, depending. And they always remind me of the hilltop towns that you see around Italy, especially around Tuscany, because in a similar way where the church was both the focal point of the community's political life, its religious life, and just its survival in an era of marching armies and conflict around these things, they were all mixed together. So you end up where the focal point of the community in the religious aspect has to be the safe house for its survival. So you tend to have an exterior wall with a kind of arrow slits in some of them. And then the same way you have a keep and a castle, you'll have the church in the center of that wall in the center there. And it mirrors the architecture of a fortification, but this time in a religious setting, because the two were really inseparable.
Yeah, I remember it seemed to me almost like the Alamo, as if the Alamo fort was built around a church. And then they had this wooden infrastructure inside the wall where each family had a sort of a ledge and a place to sleep and a place to shoot their whatever they were shooting out the slits. And the family was responsible for that little bit of the fortification. And it's just a reminder of the tough times they were living through these centuries. And as travelers, we can better understand the story. Tim Tendick's been leading tour groups across Europe for a decade. Lately, he's been exploring the edges of Eastern Europe and Southwest Asia on his own. Tim's with us on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us what excites him about Romania as we connect the Wi-Fi through the thick walls of his hotel in Sighișoara. That's the colorful Transylvanian town where the story of Dracula was first penned. Tim posts photos and his Romania tour itinerary at guided-by.com. Tim, when I think of Romania, I really do think of kind of a time warp. I went up to Maramureș, and it was like literally a living museum. All over Europe, you have open-air folk museums where you see people doing the traditional thing and dressed in the traditional way and living in these traditional homes. In Maramureș, it's just real. What's your experience in Maramureș?
It's funny you say like an open-air museum, because one of my favorite places to stay up there is sort of an accidental open-air museum. You had the wife of a couple actually was the doctor for that area, and the neighborhood got to know that you could pay her if you were lacking on cash, but you needed a little medical care. You could pay her with some of grandma's old stuff from the attic. And every now and then they would say, hey, that whole family has moved off and gone somewhere else. Maybe they were Germans who relocated to Germany or moved to the European Union for work or whatever it was. And they would buy the entire house and they would number every plank, disassemble it, move it to their one property, reassemble it in the exact same order, and then fill it with the things that various families had filled. So it's both a hotel with a few different structures to be in, but it's a sort of accidental open-air museum of houses that are 200 years old. The man who runs it showed me at one point, there's a little thing to hang your cap on or something by the door. And he said, does it look familiar to you? And I said, well, it's a little metal circle. He said, this is that farmer's gun barrel from World War I. He got home and he never wanted to fire a gun again. So he sawed the barrel off and stuck it in the wall of his house. And now that house, the family's gone long gone. That house is now just part of this hotel. So you get to live in history, which is still very much just the walls around you as you move through Romania.
Wow. That reminds me, when I was in Romania as a kid, I was in a house like that, staying in a bed and breakfast, and they had the skull of their great-grandfather on the mantle. And I've never seen that. And they'd go, that's great-grandpa, you know. And it's just, there are some prizes awaiting us when we travel. And you take groups around Romania, and you're there right now. Tell me just about living there. I mean, we can check off all the famous sites in Romania, but what's the food like? You just had breakfast this morning. Was there anything that just charms you about the food culture of Romania?
You gotta like pork and strong flavors. They don't go shy on the onion and the garlic, I'll tell you that much. But as long as once you start getting into that, these big hearty meals, you get a sense that it'll get you through the winter and it'll get you through your time working the fields if need be. But they know how to work hard, how to eat well. But then one of my favorite things just in terms of being here for a longer period is in the evening, a lot of the row houses, especially in the towns that are kind of descended from this German Saxon heritage, will have a little bench out on the side of the road. And especially the kind of older generation, but everybody who lives there will just come out and sit on the bench. And the men are frequently wearing those little shepherd newsies caps, and everybody just kind of comes out and sits, and the dogs wander around and the kids play in the street. And it's this very almost idyllic sense of community where all the neighbors know all the neighbors, and there is not a hustle and a bustle. Everyone just sits and kind of enjoys the evening. And then you know that inside, some of those hearty dishes with stewed pork and garlic are cooking on the stove.
And the old timers are wearing those cute little hats. They're the most characteristic hats. I bought one, and I just can't imagine wearing it in this hemisphere.
It makes sense while you're here, but once you get back to Washington, it might be tough.
Oh, yeah. They're just like a little basket turned upside down that you wear on your head. And these old timers are sitting there with their well-worn little basket hats. And one thing great about traveling around Romania and countries like that is you find farmers that are selling whatever they're producing. They'll make their cheese and they'll sell it on the roadside.
Absolutely. I love that. One of my favorite things to see is the Transfagarasan Road that goes up into the Fagaras Mountains. And you get up to the top and it's like this little bit of Switzerland up there. It has these amazing mountain views, this beautiful clear lake, and then these little stalls along the side where just local farmers are absolutely coming through and just selling what they happen to have made. So depending on when you go up there, you'll get different products and they taste different because obviously the milk that they've been using will vary throughout the year, whether it was a grazing season or whether it was hay in the barn season. So you can really taste the different seasons and the flavors of the land as you move around it.
It's so, I guess earthy is a good word for it. You're buying that very, very sharp cheese right off the farm, and it's not going to be pasteurized or carefully processed like you might find in a big city. It's just the hard labor and the tradition right there in the bread and the cheese and so on. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Tim Tendick, and Tim leads tours around Romania. He's on the line with us right now from the town of Sighișoara, which has got to be the most beautiful town in Romania. Tim's website is vagabondurges.com. So, Tim, I know that your tours last 13 days. If you're going to take me around Romania for 13 days and show me your idea of the best of it, it's a fascinating country in part because, except for Dracula's castle, most tourists don't know anything about Romania. Tell me how we'd spend 13 days. Just take me on a quick sweep through that itinerary.
Modern Romania is composed of three former principalities. You have Wallachia in the south, which was really kind of a breadbasket for a few centuries there, everybody who came through. And then you have the famous Transylvania in the kind of northwest. And they don't actually call it Transylvania here. They'll call it Ardeal, just because it does have such a regional identity to it. And then they continue the confusing naming, because in the kind of northeast, you'll hear them talk about Moldova, which is different from the Republic of Moldova. Moldavia, they also call it. So you have these three regions. And I think it's really important to see all three, because while they're united in a shared Romanian identity, each of them has its own flavor, and they also have their own little stereotypes about each other and their own kind of little jokes and things. Huh. And it reminds me a lot of Italy, where you had these different city-states that all blended together to form the modern one. So I like to start Bucharest, the capital where you land at the airport there, is down in the kind of Wallachia region. And then as you move up into Transylvania, it's really probably the easiest place to be. It has such a series of great cities, from Brasov to Sibiu and then Sighișoara, where I am at the moment, which really feel like these great little Austrian enclaves with the pastel colored houses and the tile roofs. But then if you get up into Moldova or Moldavia, it feels like almost Jeffersonian, that kind of Jeffersonian yeoman idea. It's these little independent farmers. They're very proud. They're very hardworking. They each have their own homestead. And they've just built a remarkable culture there, which also shares the collective Romanian experience of being on the borderland between empires.
You do get a sense that they spent 50 years under Soviet rule, essentially, when they're in the Warsaw Pact. And you've got all these Soviet-style, you know, these blocky Soviet-style apartment tenements. And you've got a very charming, I'm thinking of Brașov here, a very charming medieval town center. And then you've got these no-nonsense blocks of Soviet apartment flats.
You too, absolutely. That I mean, I say that there are all these different historical eras, but that's not to say they're all viewed the same. Romania is definitely aware of its communist past, and it's trying with every bit of its effort to move past it and away from it. But you do see those vestiges, particularly in Bucharest. That's one of my favorite things, is their mix all in. You can see a kind of, you know, Austrian secessionist house with these amazing crenellations and details next to a fairly, I'll just go ahead and say, horrendous kind of Khrushchev style Soviet tenement block. And then across the street from that, you'll have the nice shiny glass EU kind of German funded sort of building. So you'll see them all mixed in.
In the capital city there of Bucharest, you've got this, what by some measures is the biggest building in the world, this massive palace of parliament that was built by that horrible dictator Ceausescu. And talk about megalomania. He just about impoverished the whole country to build this wacky, massive palace. And I've never used wacky as an architectural term, but now he's long gone and they're trying to figure out what to do with this thing. I mean, talk about a communist heritage.
It is. And that building is a fascinating insight into that area and how Romania is trying to adapt to it, because he bulldozed an entire basically medieval city to build it. And then they were left with this mammoth construction. It's the world's heaviest building. The utility cost just to keep the lights on in winter and heat the thing is kind of insane. So trying to use that space, because they don't want to just leave it decrepit. So they have 5 museums in there. They still have the Congress and the Senate meeting in there. It's still very much a living building. They're trying to make the most of it. When you take a tour in there, the tour lasts 1.5 to 2 hours, and they just give you a fairly cursory view, but it gives you a sense of how big it is. It's like Versailles crossed with the Pentagon crossed with Disneyland. It is wacky is the right word.
Wacky. You know, I can think of 2 grand palaces in Romania, Ceausescu's Parliament Palace in the capital city, and then you've got this beautiful parish palace, which was, we all know Mad King Ludwig's castle, Neuschwanstein. I guess there was a German prince in Romania, and he wanted to have a romantic German-style palace. It's a delightful palace. I got really angry when I was in Ceausescu's palace, and I became much happier when I was at Parish, as you leave Bucharest and you go into the Transylvanian region. Do you know what I'm talking about with that Parish Palace?
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite places to go because it's out in the woods. So they keep the parking kind of far enough away so you have to walk up the kind of stone path to get to it. And then you don't have the kind of tourist souvenir kind of kitsch press. And then you come up through the woods, through these beautiful old buildings, and then you get to the palace itself. And as you move through that level of finery of these beautiful, in this beautiful neo-Renaissance castle with Murano glass chandeliers and just the spared no expense that one could do at the end of the Age of Monarchs, moving into the early 20th century. It's a really unique place to go. And I think your comparison with King Ludwig's castle in Neuschwanstein is perfectly apt and really reflects one of Romania's main appeals. Is Neuschwanstein gets a couple million people a year. Pelesh Castle gets maybe 300,000. So you're getting, a fifth of the people. It's
indicative
so much calmer
of
to go there.
How many more tourists are in Germany than in Romania, that's for sure.
And most of the tourists who are there are Romanians.
And Tim, to wrap up our conversation, I'm just curious, as you lead groups around Romania, what's the biggest challenge for you and what's the biggest joy about sharing the cultural wonders of Romania with your guests?
This is one where I'm gonna give away the tour guide secret because we try to be like the ducks where you're calm on the top of the water while your feet are swimming furiously below you. But the calm of Romania as you move through where it doesn't have that hustle and bustle because, you know, people are still living at maybe a more natural rhythm. I love that where you can see it as you're driving down the road, you'll suddenly have a bit of a backup on the road. And it's because there's a farmer going down the street pulling the day's produce in a horse-pulled cart. And it's a beautiful thing to see. It slows you down. It makes you kind of feel the area. But suffice to say, if you're running on a schedule and you're trying to fit in that one more castle or that one more fortified church, it can be a little bit of an inconvenience, I'll be honest.
And if you happen to be making a public television TV show about Romania and you need a friendly farmer on a horse-drawn cart, you got your choice, and I had no problem getting one of them to let me hop on board and take all the time in the world to make a good on-camera open for the show. Romania, it's just a pile of surprises filled with beautiful people. Tim Tendick, thanks for joining us, and best wishes with your travels in Romania.
It is my pleasure. Mulțumesc, as the Romanians say. Thank you.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton, Kazmira Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Our website is managed by Andrew Wakeling. Our theme music was written and performed by Jerry Frank. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.